raw data analysis.
Okay.
Kind of done in very quick fashion towards the end of the last semester. And where do we want to go with it? Where do you think we should go with it? What should we start looking at to help refine future direction? Because right now I feel a lot of what I'm doing is I'm gathering lots and lots and lots of raw data,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not necessarily sure in the refined scope that we discussed in May,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, and that's why I had the JPEG up, in terms of single workload consolidation, you know, array performance modeling, and then making that progressively more complicated to do workload consolidated modeling and things as such. I think the current rounds of experiments I'm running in the data that I've gathered is still very much towards the DSM, SSM type analysis, which is a subset of the problem that we're looking at.
Yeah.
But I think those experiments, while very valuable and have shown us a lot of information about the array and the workload, I don't think that necessarily they're going to give us the data that we need, you know, to get started on those problems.
Yeah.
So
what I was hoping that we could do is build on, at least for the single workload modeling, we could build on top of the Basel work.
Okay.
And try to reproduce those results for at least the random workloads.
Okay.
Right. And if we can do that, then we have a starting point, and then we perhaps our next task would be to refine the model to also include sequential workloads and or with varying degrees of sequentiality, right? And it's not clear how we can incorporate sequentiality into the equation right now, into the Basel equation right now, because the sequentiality does introduce some nonlinear effects. And but there might be a way to capture that. Nevertheless, I think we should start by trying to reproduce the Gulati work.
Okay. Now, one of the things I remember, one of our conversations about the Gulati work was Basel was not so much workload modeling as it was workload placement on devices as a black box.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, I mean, I know Gulati used discarded writes and discarded sequential, and Gulati went with, so we're going to look at reads, anything from, I think it was 95% sequential, all the way down to 0% sequential. But it was really, wasn't trying to, I mean, if I remember our conversation correctly, I think we had agreed, Gulati wasn't trying to tell you what kind of the workload you were going to get by combining the outstanding I/O, the percentage read, the percentage random aspect of the model. I think he was using those as metrics to say, well, given three of these and a couple of devices that I don't know anything about, where's the best place to put them?
Hmm.
So I think it was more gauging, how do I say this? I believe Gulati was trying to gauge more a performance placement analysis rather than a workload consolidation model.
Yeah. So.
But there's work there that's definitely very, very valuable.
Yeah. So one piece of that work requires modeling the performance of a single workload on a single storage. Right. Even when they are doing placement decisions, they need to determine if a workload can be supported by a storage system.
Okay.
And for making that decision, they use the model that they develop in the first part of the work, right? Which is a workload model with a set of parameters for that describes how sequential the workload is, the percentage of reads versus writes.
Right.
I think the I/O size, and then the number of outstanding I/O requests. So that's how they capture the characteristics of the workload,
okay.
And then they capture the device characteristics with the fifth parameter.
Looking at the latency.
Right. So and they argue that device, if you just change, for instance, the number of bits behind a RAID without actually changing, for instance, the RAID level or any of the other characteristics of the RAID, then you can create a performance model for the device as well, right? Assuming that, you know, most of the things remain the same, right? And that was, and then they combined the workload model and the device model together to get a performance model for a specific workload on a specific device.
Right.
And which is what they use as a building block to do the placement.
To do the placement. Actually, I just put up the basal paper.
Yeah.
And what we're talking about is...
is that first equation up there.
Right there, right?
Now there, this equation is modeling latency, which is a performance parameter of the workload, and how it is affected by those various parameters of the workload, and a device-specific parameter which appears in the denominator, but it's later it is elaborated upon,
right?
The device-specific parameter. So if we are able to create a model using these characteristics and instantiating these various K1, K2, K3, and so on, so our goal would be for that specific device, so for that specific platform, what are the values of K1, K2, K3, and K4. And then as you change the device, then your K5 would change, right? But K1, K2, K3, and K4 would remain the same,
right?
Because they are workload specific,
right,
parameters. And so that's something that we want, we should be reproducing first.
Okay.
And if we have to discard some of the data points which are on the fringes of sequentiality numbers, or even I think they had some, I think, did you say that they discarded writes or they disabled the write buffer?
I think they discarded the 100% write workload and the sequential workload. I think, yeah, here we go. The extreme cases, corner cases.
Okay.
And I think if we look at the earlier graphs, they're later on. I think that's the one I'm looking for. Was sequential workloads.
Right, okay. Majority of the cases with large error are sequential workloads. Okay.
And I think, and the writes were also discarded. Which I think we have to take into account.
I think the 100% writes are the ones that got discarded. Or is it all?
I thought they did all of their modeling based on just reads, because the argument was writes will go to cache, and that gives you the negative slope.
Well, I think what they did eventually was disable the write buffer, and they said that if we disable the write buffer, then this is the one which has anomalous workload. Because as you vary the percentage of read, the performance is not linear. And then they said that, okay, well, we're going to disable the write buffer, and then we see the linear performance. And I think that's in one of the later charts, maybe. Can you go up? I think we probably need to look at the discussion of that.
Of this graph?
Of the previous one. Yeah, that one. That's figure 5, right?
Let me zoom out a little bit. This is...
figure 5.
Figure 4 and figure 5.
So they're already at figure 6. So figure 5 should be at...
possibly the previous page.
No. should be in the next page.
Okay, let's do this.
Oh. Right, so I guess they are ignoring that anomaly. They're not really addressing it in any significant way. Rather, they're saying that, well, those cases are uncommon, so you don't really have to predict for those values of the read percentage.
Of the heavy sequential read percentage?
Heavy sequential read percentage, those are for specific workloads. They're not for all workloads.
See, this is the piece that I remember right here. Large number of writes happening during the period of outstanding I.O.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they discarded writes.
Mm.
Large specific challenges.
I think their discussion is further up, just below these figures.
Just below these?
Yeah, right here. Sequential IOs. Large IO sizes. The slope can be negative if IO sizes are large during the periods of low IO and small during the periods of high IO.
There we go. We made two modifications. We only consider outstanding read IOs. Okay.
Oh, read outstanding IOs.
Yes. Okay.
I see. And average read latencies. So it's not that they ignore write workloads.
Right.
But just they look at read specific parameters and ignore the write specific parameters. We could try doing the same thing, I guess. But do we have separate information for read latencies versus write latencies?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Remember correctly, we have total latency, read latency, and write latency.
Okay.
Oops. Which is one of the things. They use IOMeter, so I know that we have to have it because we're using IOMeter.
Oh, yeah. So fortunately, we're using the same tool.
So I know it's there.
Yeah, and that makes sense because write latencies are sort of hidden because of write buffering. And the other thing is that even if you disable write buffering, if writes are sequential, then their latencies are
very low.
Are going to be low, and and they might affect the overall latency characteristics of the workload, right? And so that's something that I think if we go with the set of assumptions that are being made in the Basel paper and the set of exclusions, specific data, then I'm guessing that we should be able to reproduce the same model. So we could start by doing that with the set of data that we have. I know we have some very weird data based on our last discussion with, I think there was sequential read workloads, right? Just standalone sequential read workloads.
Yes. And that was... that was this graph.
So when you say paired workload, what does that mean? There are two workloads there.
Two workloads on independent disks.
On independent
sets of disks.
Yeah.
So you would expect to see them both. For example, this is the paired workload.
And they are both of sequential reads. Are they both sequential reads or?
No. The top line, the sequential workload, this is the pure sequential read workload.
I know, but in the paired workloads, the two workloads are both sequential reads?
No.
This
peak right here is when the second workload went sequential. And then this was its random behavior.
What is the number of in the x-axis? What is that?
Oh, that is the data point number, which we should probably change. Just the order of the experiment ID or something like that.
Oh, these are all different combinations of workloads, is it?
Yes. Against the one pure sequential workload.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at 32 IO, we saw what we expected. The sequential workload always maintains its high performance. And at the lower level, outstanding IO, the purely sequential workload only achieves a high degree of performance when the workload on the other disks also goes 100% sequential. When the other workload became random to some degree, it dragged down the performance for 16, 8, and 4 outstanding IO.
Okay. Is this the first workload?
That is the first workload.
On an independent set of spindles.
On an independent set of spindles.
And this one is the other workload.
On an independent set of spindles.
But the characteristics of that workload is changing.
Yes.
Okay.
So
this workload is remaining exactly
yes.
the same. It's sequential with 32.
Yes.
And in this case, 16. And in this case, it's
yes.
8.
Yes.
Okay. And this point here is when both are sequential.
Yes.
Both are sequential reads.
Yes.
And at some point, there is a sequential write configuration also? Or this is only reads?
I have to go look at the data. I don't remember. Well, let's look at the data points.
Okay.
There is percentage read, percentage random. So no, there is a sequential write workload there. And there it is. Second workload, 0% random, 0% read.
Okay, so it's all right.
Right.
And that's number 3?
Yes.
So that's the one where we get high throughput?
That's the one that begins to...
go. So the number 3 here, where is number 3? Number 3 is the peak. And that's sequential write.
point, right? If that's 0.3, what is this graph defined as? It does not correspond to the points.
Oh.
It's just a sequential integer.
Okay, first of all, the first workload, which is at, you know, the high throughput, it's a sequential read workload. Is that correct?
Or? Yes, purely sequential read workload.
Okay. And the other workload is all possible configurations for a competing workload.
Yes.
Including change in read versus write, sequential versus random.
Yes.
And number of outstanding IOs as well?
Outstanding IOs are held constant for both.
Oh, for both. So they're both 32?
Yes.
In the last graph. And then what else do we change here? IO size? Is that also changing or is it the same? So the only things that are changing is sequentiality and read versus write. Okay. And the peak, and the peak, do we know when the peak occurs? It's when both are sequential reads. So if it's a random read and it's a read-only workload, performance should degrade, right?
Yes.
And we would expect that it degrades.
And we see that.
But if it's a sequential write, the performance still degrades.
To some degree, yes, because these graphs have write caching turned off.
Have write caching turned off. I see. Well, yeah, but they are degrading substantially. You wouldn't expect a sequential write workload to degrade so much, right? So what is the anomaly in this workload? I mean, in this graph?
In this graph here?
In the third one, yeah.
None.
There's nothing wrong with it.
As far as I can tell.
But what about the 100% sequential paired workload? Shouldn't we see higher bandwidth numbers there too?
The 100% sequential read or write?
Write workload.
3,900 IOPS. It was actually 3 times higher than the random workload.
True, but
you would expect
still,
it to be
it's still really low for a sequential write workload. For a sequential workload, I mean, I would expect it to be similar to the sequential read workload. Something weird is going on. So you never, were you able to get good sequential write throughputs for any of these experiments?
Up into the 8,000s of IOPS, but never anything approaching the read performance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, in these set of experiments, you have 8 drives and another set of 8 independent drives. And there are 2 workloads simultaneously running.
Yes.
How do you ensure that these 2 workloads run for the same amount of time, or one workload doesn't end its execution before the other one?
IO meter
does that.
IO meter does that. You say, how long do you want to run the test, and
okay,
it runs the configuration for n number of seconds.
Okay.
Both of them. It's the IO meter configuration.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Check something. I hadn't bothered to notice that anomaly before in terms of the sequential write. Should have been much higher.
Mm.
What does my configuration look like? We just went through a password change. I don't remember that password. Right now I have 4 disks only.
Okay.
And no relay. No caching. Okay. Direct IO. So this is not going to be nearly as close to the other numbers we saw. The number of disks has been halved.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've seen. It's gotten up the highest to the 8,000.
Mm-hmm. But we saw that it reduced to 3,000 with the competing sequential read workload. Now, this is independent sequential write.
Yes.
There is no other competing workload.
There's no other competing workload. On half the disks.
Mm-hmm. On half the disks. Wow. So with twice the number of disks, it should be even higher, I guess. But
we can configure that. Mm-hmm. But even with twice the number of disks, that is the number I've seen.
I see. So there may be some other bottleneck elsewhere. But it, we did see read throughputs that exceed this number. So it could not, it cannot be a bus bottleneck.
Let's look at CPU array, workload. Let's just look at the IOPS. So we're looking at just workload IOPS, and let's look at, oh, but these are tied to each other. Dedicated sets of spindles, 32 deep, sequential, write.
And this is a paired workload, is it? There are two workloads in this?
Yes, on independent disks.
Okay.
I just wanted to see what the average IOPS were. Now I would like to see what the max is. Looking at lung one,
not too different.
Actually, both workload sequential impacts it. All right, I also
now, in both are writes. Both are writes, sequential write workloads.
Yes, on independent disks.
On independent disks. So what if we make those sequential read workloads, both of them?
You're looking...
And so this is one sequential read and one sequential write.
Yep.
Then the sequential write...
And double sequential reads.
Wow. And that's simultaneous, so which means that the bus can actually sustain twice this maximum value,
mm-hmm.
which is 40,000 IOPS.
And I've seen, and this only stops at 32 outstanding IO. I've taken it higher to 64 outstanding IO. The bus will sustain even more.
Mm-hmm.
Because the slowest point in the whole bus is 320 megabyte per second interface on the controller.
Okay. So this is 20 times 2, which is 40,000 times 4K, right? This is 4K I
160
megabytes per second. So something about the writes start messing things up, but the reads are okay as long as you maintain sufficient queue depth. Can we go to the anomaly graphs? The first two graphs, what was the problem with those first two graphs?
That the 100% sequential read workload,
also,
the performance of it was dependent upon, that's what I get for running beta software. This is the Office 2010 beta. It's now out in RTM, but I haven't updated it on this machine.
What is RTM?
Release to manufacturer. The general, the GA
mm-hmm.
has been made available.
But this is quite an amazing piece of software.
That tool stands to revolutionize business intelligence analysis. And it's all done on the desktop, and all of the data is saved in the spreadsheet. It is. Okay, fine. Don't save it. Just go away. Die. You already crashed. Equivalent kill minus 9.
Task kill slash F.
Force.
Force.
And FI is filter.
I see.
And filter can be, there's a whole syntax for PID, user, image name.
I see.
And
okay.
It works remotely over the network.
That's good, yeah. But this is your local command line, right?
Yes. If I wanted to make it work over the network, I would do
You specify a
system.
Uh-huh.
It's his name.
I see.
And it would go over RPC.
Cool.
Assuming you had sufficient security access on your machine. Okay, here we go. Well, your graphs haven't changed, so I don't have to recover. Okay. So this graph here is the anomaly with this graph is that the 100% sequential read workload performance is impacted by the other workload even though they're on independent spindles. And the only time that they peak is when they both go 100% sequential read. See, I would expect to see this graph always for any number of outstanding I/O. But for anything less than 32 outstanding I/O, the graph looks like this. But it shouldn't.
Yeah, well, the thing is that when you have, I think we had a brief discussion about this, about the impact of outstanding I/Os on the throughput. That if you send out only one outstanding I/O, although you're doing it sequentially, the disk drives, if you do only one, so I guess we are trying to figure out why there is a difference between sequential throughputs with one outstanding I/O versus 32.
Or even 8 or 16 outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, so there is a whole range of
anything from 1 to 16. And somewhere between 16 and 32, there's the magic point where it does what it does on the bottom. Mm-hmm. I didn't step OIO by 1.
My guess is that even if you don't have a competing workload and you were just doing sequential, there would be a difference of throughput with change in number of outstanding I/Os.
Yes, but they're still very high.
Yeah, they're still quite high, but there is a difference. So the first question is, why is there a difference even with no competing workload? Right. And I think we had some discussion about that.
And that's what we said, the busier you keep the array, the better it will perform to a certain extent.
Right. And by having more outstanding I/O, you're triggering all the prefetching mechanisms aggressively.
Oh, prefetching is turned off here.
Oh, prefetching is turned off for the RAID controller, but
not for the disk.
Not for the disk drives. And so when you have a whole bunch of outstanding I/Os, what's happening is that those outstanding I/Os are being sent to multiple drives. Whereas if you have only one, you sort of go round robin to each of those disk drives. Right? So the internal prefetching of drives are, they are probably being triggered anyway, but then you're not keeping the bus utilized as much, transferring data, because at any given time only a subset of the drives are active. But if you have larger number of outstanding I/Os, all the drives are always get I/O requests, right? Because those I/O requests are striped across all these drives.
But this is a RAID 0 configuration, so the data is striped across all of the drives.
Yes, but when you issue only one outstanding I/O at a time, that I/O request is going to only one drive. Because remember, we are doing 4K I/Os here, right? So if one I/O request, although it's sequential, sent out individually will only reach a single drive in that array. So the rest of the drives are not busy. If you had 32, you send out 32 requests at a time, all the drives are being hit at the same time, and they're transferring data at the same time. Right. So you're transferring data for 32 requests with the latency of a single request. and then you had the next batch of 32 come in. Right? So the round trip time of one I/O request, you're probably getting 32. And then you have a whole bunch, whole new 32 requests again, filling the pipeline. So for each disk, you can think of this as a pipeline of requests.
There's always something.
There. There's always something with 32 outstanding IOs, but with one outstanding IO, that is not the case. Especially so when you have prefetching turned off in the controller. So the controller doesn't do any aggressive prefetching on its own. When the drive eventually detects that there is a sequential stream, it will do some prefetching, but it will stay in the drive cache. It will not come into the controller cache, right? On the other hand, with 32, it's coming, all the 32 requests are coming into the controller cache. So you're filling up the backplane behind the controller connecting to the disk drive as well, right? So if we can look at a single workload by itself, and see what happens at different outstanding IOs, you'll see the bandwidths will be different. Maybe not as drastically different as when you add a competing workload, but there will still be a change, right? And I think we talked about this.
Yes.
So we understand why the throughputs depend on the number of outstanding IOs without any competition, right?
Yes.
Without a competing workload. Now, when we introduce a competing workload, like in this case, we see at some point that for 8 outstanding IOs, you see here itself, right, there is a difference. With 8 outstanding IO, your maximum sequential throughput is around 7,000. With 16, it goes up to 10,000. And with 32, it goes up to 15, right? So if we ignore the competing workload,
mm-hmm.
you see there is a difference.
Yes.
Of the sequential throughput.
Yes.
Maximum sequential throughput at different outstanding IOs.
Absolutely. And that goes back to what we just said. And the more outstanding IO you have, the better, to a degree, the better your performance is going to be.
Right. Because the bus is more busy. And probably the drives are also more busy. I'm not sure which one is the bottleneck here. Perhaps the bus being utilized is the bottleneck here. Right. So here though,
why is there interdependence though?
The problem that we are seeing, the bigger problem is the sequential read workload throughput degrading substantially
in the presence of
any competing workload except for the sequential read workload.
Yes.
And so here you have, for the controller, you have read refetching turned off, right, and write buffering also turned off. And these are independent spindles. So there is no question of ARM contention.
Right. Which is why I would expect that on a different scale. But
now when you say 16 outstanding IOs in paired workload configuration, each of those individually have 16 outstanding IOs. So the total is 32.
Yes.
Or
no, the total is 16H.
Oh. What about at this point? Is that also 8H?
Let me take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me take a look at that, because that, let me clarify that in IO meter. There's a tricky definition of outstanding IO and IO meter.
Q-depth.
Q-depth.
Access specification.
Actually, number of outstanding IOs.
Per disk, the selected workers will attend per disk.
Okay, so they are 16 each then.
Per disk? They say per LUN. Is it per LUN or
what? Well, they say per disk, meaning a mounted partition at the operating system level.
Okay.
But that's if I have two partitions.
Mm.
The number of outstanding IOs controls the maximum number of outstanding asynchronous IOs per disk the selected workers will attempt to have.
Mm-hmm.
To each selected worker, each selected disk.
Okay.
Right, which is my configuration. So yes, it's 16 each.
Mm-hmm. 16 each.
Yeah, so in this case, this would be 16 independent, 32 total.
Mm-hmm.
This would be 64 total.
Okay.
But there's
okay. Yeah.
But running the workload by itself at 16 outstanding IO gives you the sustained 10,000.
I see. Okay.
I didn't answer the first time. I'm not going to answer the second time. What is it about another workload?
They're not competing for the disk,
no.
But they are competing for controller cycles and controller cache.
Controller cache is disabled.
Controller.
But they are competing for controller cycles.
Mm.
However,
think about having the workload independently is that the controller cycles are fully engaged in doing the sequential read workload, and they perhaps are able to keep the bus, the backend, backplane, more busy because they're sending out requests at a faster rate to the disk drives.
However, if I remember correctly, this controller has two channels, and each channel's on an independent SCSI processor. We should be reinforced by this graph here, where they are independent of each other.
Mm, that's true. Mm. Yeah.
So if there were shared SCSI processors on the controller, I would expect to see that pattern consistently. But each channel has its own controller. Each channel has its own SCSI processor. There is one controller. And then what is shared is the interconnect onto the PCI bus, which is radically faster than anything the controller can do.
So this controller is not on the PCI bus, right?
It is on the PCI.
It is on the PCI bus?
It interconnects to the PCI bus.
Okay. And then the backplane is a single bus that connects to all the 16 drives?
No.
Connect to 8 each.
Can I call?
Sure.
Make sure I get this.
If
can erase all of that. This is a common room, so it doesn't expect to survive. That's probably a PhD candidacy exam. Okay.
No.
Be careful.
This controller presents another problem at a high degree of outstanding I/O because of its configuration. The firmware of the controller can only sustain a maximum of 256 outstanding I/Os, but the driver is limited to 190 something. So I can't set 128 outstanding I/O
uh-huh.
to individual workload. They will then start to thrash each other.
Mm-hmm.
The queue overflows, and then you can see them. You can see where the controller is thrashing between the two. One workload goes like this, and the other goes like this.
Mm-hmm.
You get that movement where it's picking from the queue on opposing workloads. So
mm-hmm.
I can't take that controller too high. But that tends to be the case in the industry in general, where there is a limit on the driver or device queue depth, either on your HPA or on the driver in the host OS. Most people set it at 256.
Hmm. There is a common cache inside the controller, though.
Yes, I didn't know that.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't know that. But yeah, so it actually is terribly wrong. Actually, you have one processor controlling the cache, interconnecting to PCI. With independent SCSI controllers or SCSI processors for each channel that relay back to the bus, to the central processor on the controller. And that architecture in general presents other problems at higher degrees of load, which is why I can't go higher than 2 outstanding I/O. For each independent workload, if they're done pairwise.
I see.
I can't go back. Once they get past 184 heading into the 190s, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. I think we need to sort of take a step back here and look at the pattern.
The other thing that I notice consistently is a sawtooth. Even up here, even on the graph, there's still this very, there's properties of this workload, and we were looking at that, and I can't remember what they are offhand, but as this workload moves into
more sequential configuration?
No, I think it was a variation of the writes and the reads. As it started to do more writes, it impacts the performance. top line. I have to go look at the data again. This point right here is one of those.
And then it does more writes?
I think it was something to do with writes. There's multiple anomalies in here, which you also noted about sequential write bandwidth. Sequential write performance was significantly below what you would expect. Let's look at 16 outstanding I.O. And we want, let me go find that point roughly. .35 on the paired workload is 1063. The performance of the sequential read was more heavily impacted, and I don't know, by a write workload. And in general, why was that?
Can we sort by a write?
Here?
Yeah. Let's go down to the reads.
.25% random.
That 25% random or sequential?
I'm sorry?
That 25, is that the one that you selected? Is that percentage random?
25% random. The dip is always on 25% random.
Well, the 50 and 75 are also similar.
Yes, but they start to increase. But there is...
I see what you mean. So 100% random... it's better than 25% random for the competing workload, as well as for the original workload, as well as for the random workload. Right? If you're 100% random, you're doing better than 25% random. Not substantially, but still. So 25% random, is, maybe we can look at it as 25%, 50%, 75% random, and 100% random are all equivalent. They're all more or less 100% random. Right?
And that was one of the things that I had noted, is that cutoff where sequentiality stopped paying off in terms of performance is right around the 3-4% mark. Anything other than 96% sequential was essentially equivalent to a random workload. There was, as outstanding I.O. was increased, a noticeable difference, but it was still, and that's actually these graphs here. Look at the graphs. That's this right here.
What is this graph on the, okay, I see.
So what is the lowest line there? Those are...
Let me zoom out a little bit. So we're looking at read latencies.
Oh, read latency. And there are two workloads here?
Yes.
Okay.
So the... can't see the colors very well. Blue and the red line are the... blue and the red line are...
DSM.
DSMs.
Mm-hmm. And the y-axis is what is throughput? Megabytes per second?
Milliseconds latency.
Oh, latency. So lower is better than... And those are at different read and write ratios?
Yes.
Those are at zero?
Yes.
How is it that the latencies are so small but the throughputs vary substantially? Or, I mean, shouldn't this match the other graph? See, the latencies are interesting.
These graphs may not be sorted and prepared the same way. Now, low latency would imply high throughput. These are the sequential workloads, and we're looking at.
Now, what I'm saying here is that sequential read and sequential read in a DSM should be one of the points in there, right?
Yes.
And the latencies are not all that different in any of those combinations.
If I remember correctly, I used 32 outstanding IOs to generate this graph.
So, and these are all sequential, the zero is
sequential.
Sequentiality. And
yes.
But there is a workload in there which is sequential write.
Yes.
And that does not get affected as it does in the throughput graph.
These are only read latencies.
Only read latencies?
These are only read latencies.
Oh, I see. So the sequential write workload doesn't even figure in this one.
But the read latencies are all that are being graphed.
But then the read latency should be zero because there are no reads for that sequential write workload, right? So one of the points in there should be invalid or something.
What did I pick? Num1 read latency. 320 as Num1. Let's see what we have here. Ah, this is just read, that's why.
Oh, it's just read versus read?
Yes.
Then how can you have so many combinations of read at 0% sequential?
How many combinations do I have in here? 1% read. Oh, I'm not seeing the entire graph, that's why. This is Num1 sequential read.
I'm wondering is why are there so many different configurations? Maybe there are different runs. Are they different runs of the same experiment? Are these different arrays or?
No. This is what am I filtered on here? I'm filtered on all 100% read at a queue depth of 32 with a work file size of 32 gigs, sorted by random, and that's it.
So what's changing though across all these each record?
Why do I have multiple entries here?
Maybe they are different experiments. Different runs of the same configuration.
I know why this is it. There are this many because there are the other paired workload is excluded from this set. But there are this many because for every one of these you have 16 of the other workload paired off. This is a look at just LUM1. However, for every one of these configurations, the reason there is repetition in here, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100.
Okay.
Is because for this particular 100, you may have the opposing LUN at 0, 0.
Okay, I understand that.
This one's 0.25, this one's 0.50, and so on and so forth.
Sure. So if you go back to the other graph, there are all these different combinations at 0% sequential for these two workloads. They're all the same experiment? They're the same configuration? For both?
What do you mean? I don't.
So, how many of these? Are there 16 of these guys over here? Or more? There seem to be more.
More.
But they're all fully sequential. Right? Both the workloads. There are two workloads, right?
Yes.
Both
one of them is fully sequential.
Well, one of them is fully sequential.
Yes. This is looking just at LUN1.
This is DSM, right? There are LUN1 and LUN2 in there. There are two lines in there. LUN1 and LUN2.
Yes, there is LUN1 and LUN2, and LUN2's graph was cut from another spreadsheet, sorted, and filtered the same way.
Oh, I see. So this is the same 100% sequential, 100% read?
Yes.
Or on both LUNs?
Yes.
But each time it is combined with a different...
Right.
So these were never paired with each other. They were not run at the same time. These two... That the workloads which are being plotted at the same time were not run at the same time.
No.
They were always run with some other workload.
Yes.
Maybe one of those points, they were run at the same time with 100% read, 100% read, both are sequential.
That point does exist in there.
It does exist. Maybe
somewhere in there.
Yeah. Interesting. I see. Okay, so that clarifies my MCV. So it's all 100% sequential read for both workloads. And at any given point, it doesn't mean that but in the SSM case, they should be running at the same time, otherwise it wouldn't make sense to plot them together, right?
In the SSM, they are running on the same time, on the same on the same shared set of spindle, and that these lines up here.
How is it then that there are the same number of configurations for the SSM and the DSM, when in one case, it only accounts for the workloads that are running simultaneously, whereas in the other case, workloads run simultaneously, but there are also configurations that do not run simultaneously in the DSM case.
No.
So I think there are equal number of configurations in both, I think.
Yes, there are an equal number of configurations in both. They're filtered the same way and sorted the same way.
Okay.
So you have experiments.
Oh, they are sorted. How are they sorted? According to the sequentiality.
see, in the DSM case, you have two workloads shown at the same point of the x-axis, but they don't run at the same time, right? Or most of them, except for one, I guess.
Right.
But in the SSM, they all must be running at the same time, right? I mean, each point, the two configurations must be running at the same time. Otherwise, it's not an SSM experiment, because they need to share this with us at the same time.
No, in the DSM, they also run at the same time.
Oh, they do?
Yes, they do, just on independent spindles.
But if they do, then why do you have so many combinations of the same sequential read 100% experiment?
Because the opposing experiment that was running at the same time varied its configuration.
No, but I'm saying here,
okay.
At a single point, both of these lines are 100% sequential reads, correct?
Yes. But
so all of these guys run at the same time?
Yes, but you're looking at them only for 100% sequential, not for the paired experiment that was running with it. And that's why you have that many combinations.
What about the SSM case?
Same configuration for the graph. Same data, same configuration. But the lines are more volatile because the spindle is shared. And hence, the behavior of the other workload impacts significantly what you see.
So for instance, this point on the red line was probably run with this point on the blue line.
Probably.
But they are sorted in such a way that they overlap. So these do not run at the same time.
No, not necessarily.
But for this guy, they need to run at the same time.
Well, what do you mean when you say they do not run at the same time? Do you mean
simultaneously? So all of these are 100% sequential reads on both the volumes, correct? On both the arrays.
Yes. But it's 100% and something.
Right. But I'm saying this specific point on the x-axis gives me the impression that these two points on these two separate lines were workloads that ran at the same time.
But they were not.
They were not.
They were not.
Right.
Okay. This is looking at the independent workloads sorted by percentage sequentiality for the purposes of seeing the weak case of the DSM-SSM argument, which is segregated workloads that are sequential perform well independent of each other. However, when mixed on a shared spindle back end, you essentially degenerate into a random case. Does that make sense? What it is I'm trying to convey with that graph?
Right. I understand that. Now let's go to the SSM.
Okay.
Here in the SSM, you have all of these guys are 100% sequential read.
Yes, for any particular.
Once again, we have the same problem, which is this point was not run simultaneously with this point, even for the SSM. Right? Because otherwise, all of these guys would be 100% sequential reads. And you wouldn't need to run it so many times together.
Right. I'm just a little confused, but yes.
So the same problem that we have here, we also have it in the SSM case.
Yes.
So these two points are not
directly correlated.
Directly correlated.
What you're seeing is for any one line, independent of the other lines,
mm-hmm.
you are seeing the sorted sequential performance
mm-hmm.
with any other set of workloads
mm-hmm.
for all four lines
mm-hmm.
in both models, or two lines in two models.
Yeah. I think to understand why you made this, because you wanted to sort by specific configuration, but I think what would be nice is to show the original data where the points are actually simultaneous runs as well.
Okay.
So, and then that might also be revealing in other ways. Especially in the SSM case, this area is not revealing at all. Because unless you know what is the other workload,
you cannot make sense of why this point is so high.
Right.
Or why this point is so low. So that might be an interesting graph to look at. So.
What I was really trying to accomplish with this graph was to show the weak case of the SSM, the strong case of the DSM, and how they began to converge for any given set of workloads from 25 to 75, and at 75, how the SSM begins to perform equally or better depending on the workload nature of the DSM. Lund's performance.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually, this is actually far from where we started.
Yeah.
And then these are similar graphs. For IOPS.
Yeah, I guess they would look very similar.
And latency. These are not anomalous, but they have anomalies in them. But I filtered them out by using just the 32 deep queues to get rid of the anomalies.
Right now, we are having issues even with DSM to try to explain the interference, right? I think one of the first things that we should probably do is to switch the RAID controller, if we can, and see what is the impact of doing that. I know that is a lower bandwidth RAID controller, but still, I mean, the numbers that we are seeing with this controller is way below that limit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we start with that, we might get some more insight, because this could be just some optimization or some what they think is an optimization inside the controller that's affecting the performance of these DSM configurations in a negative way.
The other controller is in a different architecture.
And that's fine. I think.
And now that I'm thinking about that, it may actually pay. Because the other controller looks like this. Quad channel, it has two processors.
Mm.
I'm wondering if it doesn't pay to do something like this.
Yeah. I think that's how you should set it up. If you have only two arrays behind such a controller, right? It would make sense to do that.
They're still a shared cache.
They are, yeah. But like you pointed out, could not be the processor cycles or the cache which is causing a problem, because at higher loads they are able to sustain.
Yep, that's right.
The throughput.
That's right. I didn't make that argument.
And it could be, I mean, the only thing that I can think of right now is something to do with the controller firmware and the way it's written. That messes things up at low I/O, low outstanding I/O, even for the VSM case. I really cannot explain it at this point. I know we've looked at it before for a couple of hours, right?
I can't explain it either.
Yeah, so it could be just like a quirk of the firmware that we are trying to reverse engineer without any knowledge about how the firmware was written. It may be possible, but it probably needs a lot more thought and considering of options and possibilities and working through them systematically. And I don't think it's going to be worth doing that. So at this point, I think our best bet is to go with a different controller that
and see if this
that happens. Leads to more, you know, results that can be explained.
See, that's the problem. I can't explain the results.
Mm.
And when I can't do that, I don't have confidence.
Yeah. So to get the same type of, or the same performance numbers with the new controller, how much time do you think it would take us?
Couple of hours to swap out the hardware,
mm-hmm.
and more 16, 10, 12 runs at 14 hours each. A little bit more, 16 hours each. So 12 times 16 is 32. 192 hours. 192 hours in days. 48,
8 days.
We're looking little more than 8 days, because I don't exactly catch it on the 16th hour when it stops, and I have to go make a configuration change to get that run to go again.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, realistically, I try to time them well, but they're still, even with the timing, there comes a point where they halt at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I won't catch those till 8 o'clock. So we're looking at 9 to 10 days
sure.
on another controller. Just to get the same results that we have here that we're looking at, the DSM-SSM.
Mm. I think we'll have to go that route at this point.
And compare them.
Mm-hmm. And if we reproduce exactly the same behavior, then we need to think a lot. Are these two different manufacturers?
They're both assembled by Dell.
Mm-hmm.
The dual channel one is an LSI. The quad channel one is an Adaptic. So the storage, the SCSI processors and the chips are different.
Okay.
But they're both assembled and shipped by Dell.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I think that's what we should be doing next.
Okay.
I think further looking at these numbers may not be very productive.
I can't explain them all. I can't. Some of the initial work, I was able to explain the volume footprint. When I said, why are my numbers so different here in an SSM? Oh, the distance between the two workloads, and whether I'm the full span of one and the other bumps against each other. Or do I have a large block of white space that I have to traverse between with the heads to get to? And some of that could be explained, but I can't explain these.
Yeah. okay, let's try with the other controller. And before we do the whole nine yards, we can try to run some of the problematic configurations first with the new controller and see what we get.
Okay.
So we can do 100% sequential reads on both sets of spindles. You know, we're talking about DSM at this point, right? And then we could try 100% sequential reads with some random write virtual and see what happens. Does the 100% sequential read degrade or not? Yeah. And if it does, then we need to reevaluate what should be our next step.
And if it doesn't, we write it off to a court in the controller.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
I was afraid of that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of time has gone in on that controller to gathering all of the data.
Yeah. The thing is that the SSM data may still be valid for this controller. So we could potentially use that data. I mean, I know that you're not going to throw any data away.
Yeah, no. I have it all.
And you've replicated it and all. You have a backup.
I have a copy at home. I have another copy on that database at work. I have the raw data files on array one mirror on the actual server. I keep a copy of the raw data at home. Short of the entire county disappearing, I have the numbers somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I don't. Even for the ones that have hardware failures, I kept the data. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the EDA's mentality. Don't forget me out.
It's certainly possible that we may be able to use a whole bunch of data from these experiments later on. Even if you're not able to use all of it.
Okay. Now I'm going to run. Well, wait a minute, if I run just the DSM configurations on the new controller, that slashes my time in half. I think I multiplied through the total number of days. No, it doesn't. Does it? Yeah, no, it's 8 to 9 days just for DSM.
Oh, I see.
Because there, so far I've run...
Well, I think before we do the whole thing, we should do some of these pilot experiments to make sure that this controller doesn't
show the same behavior.
Show the same behavior. And if it does, then we really need to think more deeply as to why this behavior is being introduced. And you said that there was a third controller as well, right? Potentially.
Yes, a 3DC, which is top configuration, half the speed. It's a 160M controller.
I see.
Controller.
So if we're able to reproduce this similar code with the second controller, we could try doing that again with the third controller as well, just to confirm that this is not necessarily a quirk of a specific firmware design, but it is a more fundamental problem that we do not understand yet.
The other thing we could use for a sanity check, although those numbers might be subject to skew from online activity on the SAN, because I have yet to free up the SAN that's gone out of warranty for use. But I have independent spindle that's not in use in the SAN. We could run against those spindles. The place where we'd have to be careful of interference is the bandwidth.
But are these jobs running throughout the day, or they're silent at night time and you could run those
24/7? At night is much lower activity than the day, but they're always going to be busy.
Let's hope that we don't need to go there. So let's try with these two controllers and
see what we get with the pilot data, and if they start to make more sense than what the data that we have right now, then we can do a complete rerun of the data collection with the new controller. Okay, so I think that sounds like a plan. So we can, depending on what you find, we can choose to meet either later this week or after you get the new round of data.
Okay. Well, let me run. I might have to change the code in the configuration generator a little bit. Build it in such a way so that it doesn't loop on both sides of the experiments and just hard code one at 100% sequential read and then let the other one loop out. And then I'll change. And I started to make those changes, make all of the control iteration variables configurable, which is something I didn't do initially. And just say, okay, start at 2 outstanding IOs, stop at 16. I would just start at 1 and go to whatever I was told to go to. So make that configurable to run a tight set of experiments in this range, only 100% read sequential on this lung, and loop the coarse grain on the other one to see how they impact each other in a dedicated spindle model.
No.
And that batch run would take substantially less because you don't have the multiplicative growth on the other lung getting in the way. Just say, show me only the 100%. No, I generated only the 100%. So it would be 100 times 4 times 4 times step outstanding IO. No. 1 times 4 times 4 times number of outstanding IO. It should be 2, 4, 8, so 4. Shouldn't be that many. It's a small number. That's 64, isn't it? 4 times 4 times 4?
Yes.
I have to check the math, but it's not going to be on the order of thousands of experiments. It should be. And at a low runtime each, it's going to take a few hours to run the batches. Okay,
that sounds good. So maybe you can run those pilot experiments and then we can decide on next steps.
I will have those done by the end of the week.
Okay.
I'll just constrain the generation of the workloads.
Okay, I think that sounds good.